Detroit today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad that you decided to join us. We want to talk now about the hundreds of thousands of people who lost power last week after an ice storm with moderately high winds. Lots of people still don't have power, as DTE and Consumers, the two companies who provide electricity and gas here in Michigan, scramble to get things reconnected. This is something that, of course, is happening more frequently, and the outages seem to last longer. Part of that clearly is about the grid that we rely on to conduct electricity, in particular to all of our homes. But how much of it has to do with the ownership structure of those utilities? DTE is a publicly traded company, but it is got a private profit motive. Same thing with Consumers. Would we do better if we had publicly owned utilities here in Michigan? And how would we make that switch? That's where we want to continue the conversation here on Detroit Today. We want to talk not just about what's going on with the outages and the experience that people are having trying to figure out how to keep food in their houses and keep warm without electricity. But we also want to talk about how can we do better? What would we do to make this all go away? I want to welcome Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who is a Democrat from Detroit. She represents the 12th District in Congress, to the conversation. If you know Rashida or have been following her on social, you know how frustrated she is with the outages and with the companies that provide us power. Rashida, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks, Stephen.
So you see DTE as responsible for these power outages. You see them as responsible for the slow pace of reconnection. At the same time, this was a kind of rare ice storm with moderately high winds. Talk about why you place the blame with DTE.
I mean, they're ultimately responsible for this critical service to all of us. But know this, you know, there's a map that I shared online because I wanted folks to see. You know, when I saw Art Reyes, who leads We the People of Michigan, who just did a report last year, a very telling report about DTE's negligence, and also, you know, some of the tactics they put in place to try to gaslight people to believe that, you know, it's the storms and not the, also the responsibility of them being able to reinvest in their into the grid. But, you know, there were storms all around the country. And if you just look at the Midwest region, mm-hmm. you saw the map. I mean, it had us, Michigan, with nearly a million people out. Illinois also had similar storms in Wisconsin. Illinois, I think it was 81,000 people out of an outage, as well as Wisconsin, it was like 60,000. Literally Michigan is nearly a million people without power. That doesn't even include, you know, the hundreds of thousands that are consumer energy outage as well. But it's very telling to see that nearly a million people in Michigan without power, you know, even though the storms, you know, swept the country. But Michigan's burnout, you know, power outages were among literally the highest among all those states.
And why is that true? So I did a little research about DTE and its finances. I saw you reporting about that as well on social media over the weekend. This is a company that made more than $1 billion last year. And when I say made, that literally is their net income or their profit. That's not revenue. They made $1 billion. How much of that should be reinvested in upgrading the grid? I mean, it's a for-profit company. It has responsibility to shareholders, and obviously its executives also are incentivized pretty heavily for performance, like making money. So what's the process, I guess, of making sure that enough of that goes back into making the service itself better instead of just those folks who invest in DTE a little richer?
You know, I thought it was the Michigan Public Service Commission's job to make sure an investor-owned private company that, again, has to answer to shareholders, as you say, not our customers. But they're the ones who have to they're the government entity that we all go to hold this company accountable. And it's unfortunate, but you know, we all know that DTE has raised rates close to, you know, they made, I think, $770 million since 2015. I don't even know afterwards. I think it was even higher now. But this is like the second highest rate increase by any utility company in the country. And they even got over $200 million in CARE Act funds. These are COVID dollars. Yet DTE still has one of the most unreliable electrical grids that contributes to, you know, much harmful negative impact on our residents. In Michigan, you know, the commission just continues to allow them to increase rates. They also have defined in a way that if, you know, somebody gets spoiled groceries and everything, they actually have it in that it has to be some sort of, quote, reasonable. And the way they define it is, oh, 3 days. So you're out of electricity for 3 days. You get $25 from DTE. $25. Do you know how hard it is to tell a resident that all their groceries, even with the cost of groceries increasing, that they're only going to get $25? That's the Michigan Service Commission needs to step up and do more. You know, we had one public hearing. We stopped the 8% increase request that they had last year. But guess what? They just now, this month, asked for not only an increase of close to, it's going to be like a 14% residential rate increase. On February 10th, they asked the Michigan Public Service Commission for yet another increase that's going to bring another $622 million. But Stephen, how do we know that's going to be invested back into the grid? When I look at where they've invested in the past, especially in Detroit, you see commercial and industry getting more modernization and more attention by DTE than residential communities, especially those hardest hit, you know, vulnerable communities that really don't have anywhere to go. They don't have the funds to go to a hotel. They don't have anywhere else to go to get resources when their groceries have spoiled. And so this past month alone, DTE wants another 14% residential rate increase. And they sent out a notice to all my residents and to all their customers that this summer, they're going to increase rates by 35% during the hours of 3 to 7 p.m., right, like they call them peak hours. Michigan Public Service Commission, if they're listening, our residents want public hearings on all these requests. They want to be part of the decision making. They are ultimately the ones responsible to pull back on the profit-driven, you know, obviously obsession by DTE that is, again, prioritizing shareholders over their customers. We cannot continue to allow them to say and blame the trees and the weather. We know this weather is increasingly going to get worse in some days. And I know growing up in Detroit, I've seen weather like this. This is not new to us. Stop telling us these are historic storms. Stop blaming the trees when we know you're not putting enough money into maintenance and upgrading the grid because you are only focused on what you can provide for the shareholders.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Representative Rashida Tlaib. She represents Michigan's 12th congressional district. She's a Democrat from Detroit. We're talking about DTE and consumers and all of the outages that persist nearly a week now after the ice storm last week. We're talking about why that continues to happen, why the grid doesn't get upgraded to the point where we have fewer outages, but also why it takes so long to get people reconnected. We want to hear from you as well during the conversation. Give us a call and let us know, first of all, do you have power? Are you part of the 168,000 Michiganders who are still waiting for your utility company to reconnect things after the storm? Give us a sense of what kind of utility structure you feel comfortable with. Do you think the publicly owned model, which is in place in some states, would be better and would better serve customers? Also, give us a sense if you're okay with these being privately owned companies or publicly traded companies, but that we need better regulation of them to make sure that they're investing more of their profits into fixing the grid than lining their own pockets. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Rashida, I want to talk a little about the Public Service Commission and how we could make it more, give it more teeth. Each time this happens, I hear people really cry out about the weakness of the commission in dealing with these utility companies. What is the lever that we as citizens, I guess, need to pull to make sure that they can do their jobs better?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think it's important as folks call in to know this. You know, we look at systems like Lansing. Lansing has a public utility system, right? They had 10 people without electricity.
10 people lost power, right?
Lost power. DTE, close to 1 million. Consumer Energy, 200,000. So you see the difference when people are trying to make a case that, again, private-driven, investor-owned company running such a critical service to our people, it's broken. And how do we push away? I don't know. When 10% or so, you know, I saw some figure like 10% of our bill goes to shareholders. The fact that I see figures saying that modernization is going and prioritizing industry and commercial versus residential. I mean, these are things that continue to, you know, for myself and others to say what can be done. I'll tell you this. When I see the report that We the People, Michigan Environmental Justice Coalition, as well as Little Sis, they did a report last year. It's very telling, you know, about the harmful decisions that they continue to make and how they are spending millions of dollars in donation to state elected folks that have to make those decisions. So you talk about Michigan Public Service Commission strengthening, you got to get through the legislature to get that done. And when you talk about, you know, the appointments at Michigan Public Service Commission, look who's on there. These are folks, again, I don't know how much power they have, but they are the folks that I remember standing in front of them and telling them, you are literally the only people that can stop it. Because if they put a request in for increase, it automatically happens unless the Michigan Public Service Commission says no, which they did last year, and they did the right thing. I mean, I think they gave them like a less than a point something percent, or it was much less than 8%. You also should know the tactics, and that's why a lot of Ann Arbor residents who have moved towards solar are very upset with DTE, that they're also pushing back against reimbursement rates for those that decide to go towards green infrastructure like solar energy and trying to diversify, you know, our sources for electricity in our state. They are also trying to reduce that, again, pushing back so they can, again, have more profit and not allow, again, for many of our residents to be able to do something much more effective than the service that they provide us. Again, as people call in, as people talk, I want them to know more can be done if the legislature and the Michigan Public Service Commission stops them. And look at models like the Lansing Public Utility Company there. I mean, this is publicly owned. And when you see the storms that hit them, I mean, 10 people versus close to 1 million, that's a drastic difference. And that says something when, again, we know that they're reinvesting all the money into, that they're getting from their customers into inside the grid so they can provide a quality, efficient service. To have the most unreliable, one of the most unreliable grids in the nation, Stephen, but the most expensive.
Yep.
It's immoral.
313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Norman in Bloomfield Hills. Norman, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. First, I would like to say to Elizabeth Slotkin, thank you. I'm looking forward to you running. And also, both your guests, you work hard for your constituents, and I appreciate that. But the comment was, I've done landscaping now for 20 years of my life and grew up on a farm. And anyone with a sense of common sense, when you're driving down like Telegraph or most of our major roads, and you look at how they've been pruning the trees to protect the wires, anyone who knows basics of being an arborist would know that when you cut half a tree off and leave the other half hanging unbalanced, that tree is soon to be a danger. And those dangerous trees are part of the cause, which is, again, DTE has sent out these crews with inexperienced arborists leaving trees in dangerous situations that are taking down power lines in 3 years, 5 years, just because it's not properly pruned and properly balanced. It's a requirement of a plant to maintain that balance. And if you knock it out of that balance, it's not going to be a good situation later down the road.
Yeah. Norman, you know, I'm glad you called because I don't know that I've heard someone explain that quite in that level of detail, that the tree pruning that they're doing, and DTE says consistently that they're doing more tree pruning. You're saying that the way that they're doing it actually exacerbates the problem because you're right. If you cut a tree in an imbalanced way, you make it more likely that it will fall or drop limbs, and that's what's been happening in larger numbers to cause these outages. Rashida, I wonder if you have heard about the tree pruning that's going on and whether it's actually making things worse, not better.
I don't know. Again, this is not a company that comes and reports back to the public, right?
Right.
I think that's a question the Michigan Public Service Commission should have more public hearings, bring them before the residents, let us ask those questions. Because the other really important thing is, you know, I hear this, that we don't have enough workers. We don't have enough folks doing maintenance, that, you know, residents ask me all the time, you know, we see these crews coming in from other states and everything. Is that because we're not replenishing? I mean, I know we do that, teacher, but what if the whole Midwest is having a storm? Do we not have the capacity or the internal in-state resources to address those moments of outages and crises? I don't know. But again, I've heard all kinds of stories. I mean, just know that I have a lot of folks that are really upset about them touching the trees, especially like, this is not even touching the wire, Rashida. I told them, I don't know what to tell them because I don't really know how to talk to DTE when they keep saying to me, it is the trees. And then there's still those outages. I mean, they keep gaslighting and sending out this information and blaming everybody else except the decisions they're making based on business, than based on customer service and reliability and making sure that, again, Michigan, who has extreme weather and has for years, can handle, you know, that their grid can handle that kind of severe weather.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Norman, really appreciate the call and that information. Let's go next to Robert in Detroit. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hi. It's a bummer about the trees getting hacked. You know, I've lived here my whole life, never really had outages. Nobody had a home generator. Now that seems to be what we all are supposed to do. But the reason why I'm calling is the numbers aren't adding up. I mean, if they're netting $1 billion a year, that's $1,000 million. So I would say flat out 10%, $100 million should go into putting the lines underground. But Congresswoman said that 10% goes to the shareholders. So that's $100 million right there. So where is the other $900 million going?
It's a great question, Robert, and we don't know as much as maybe we should or could about that. Rashida, what's the answer?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, I think this is something that Michigan Public Service Commission should have a public hearing about. Look, I heard that figure. I don't know if that's correct. I just know when I remember during the pandemic, for them to get, you know, millions of that, I mean, what, 200 or so millions of dollars of COVID dollars, and then I hear that they're still shutting people off, that they're still shutting off notices.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is problematic. Not only that, you know, I had a resident text me while she's in her car warming up, and she sent it to me, the date, the time, while she's on her day three of no power in her home, gets a bill of over $500. Again, she lives in a working class community in Redford, and she's getting a bill at the same time. So they know how to bill us. They know how to get their money from us, right? They know how to raise our rates. They seem to not be able to keep our power on, and they seem not to be able to answer a lot of our questions. They, you know, I don't want people to forget, don't wait for another outage. Don't wait for another time to contact your state legislators or to contact Michigan Public Service Commission. You know, I have a public utility bill. Everyone knows. I am trying to move something so critical because this to me is critical. It has something to do with your medical. People literally, if the weather is incredibly severe, you know, you're talking about cold weather, you're talking about people with pets in the house. I mean, all of this. I don't want people relying on a for-profit entity for those kinds of critical services, including public utilities. Utilities should be public. It is not something that, again, should be in the hands of folks that have literally meetings over and over again about how they can increase the profit and how they can increase shareholder payments.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the really frustrating dynamics for sure is the quickness with which DTE will shut you off if you fall behind in paying them, and contrast to how long it's taking in some cases for people to get their power back on. And there isn't an equivalent response, an equivalent kind of consequence for the poor service that people are getting as DTE is able to mete out if people don't have money to pay. Rashida Tlaib, it's always great to have you here to talk about these and other issues. So thank you very much for joining us here on Detroit Today.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about utilities and power and energy with Nick Schreck, who is the Associate Dean of Experiential Education and Associate Professor at Detroit Mercy School of Law. He is an environmental law expert and somebody who's thought a lot about things like the power grid, what we need to invest in it, how we need to change it so that things like this don't continue to happen. We also want to continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. We'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've decided to join. Our power lines in Southeast Michigan are operated by DTE and Consumers Energy, two massive investor-owned companies. But are these the best models for our utility companies? And if not, what are some better models? What kind of energy changes do we need to be making to set ourselves up for a future that will continue to have even more chaotic storms? To discuss these things, we now turn to Nick Schreck. He is the Associate Dean of Experiential Education and an Associate Professor at Detroit Mercy School of Law. Nick, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks, Stephen. Good to be with you.
So I'm going to start here. Same question we just asked Congresswoman Tlaib. How much responsibility do you lay at the feet of DTE and consumers for not just the outages that happen, but for the length of time it's taking to get people back reconnected? As I said at the open, 168,000 people still don't have power. Are the power companies to blame?
Well, first of all, Stephen, I'll say, solidarity with my brothers and sisters who still do not have power, because I am included in that number.
Oh, you are.
We lost our power on Wednesday at 9 p.m. and have still not been restored. And so I'm actually sitting, in a parking lot where I could get decent cell service and charge my phone. It's been an ordeal. And the length of the outage, that's the key point. I mean, power outages happen, and we talked last August when we had that. Remember that wind that came through and many of us were without power for days, 3-4 days. The length of the outage is really the problem. And when we look at Michigan compared to other states, we are, in the bottom five nationally in terms of how long it takes to get power restored. And that's just not good. I mean, particularly when you look at, we don't have the type of natural disasters of some other states on that list, like, say, California with their wildfires and, issues with avalanches and things. And we just don't have that type of activity happening in our state. So yeah, it's bad. And so as far as responsibility, I mean, I will have to be, forgiven for speaking perhaps a little bit more critically than I normally would, because I'm suffering through a 5-day power outage here.
Yeah.
The responsibility does lie with the utility company, and they, there are other states that do this better. There are other utility companies that do this better. I was looking at the numbers a few days ago, and Florida, for instance, they get people's power back quickly, even in a state that is prone to major devastation from hurricanes. So it's a problem with a lack of investment in our infrastructure and keeping our grid updated, keeping our transmission lines updated. But it's also a challenge. We talk about tree trimming, and we can go and all that as well. But really, it's an infrastructure problem, and it's a lack of upgrading our infrastructure to be able to withstand what is. Yes, there was more ice than a typical ice storm, but this isn't like you know, world-ending ice storm, right? Like, we should be able to have some resiliency here to get through.
I mean, if you think about it, it was a storm, and it obviously caused a lot of damage, but it could have been a much bigger storm and could have caused much greater damage. I can't imagine how things on the outage side and the restoration side would have looked if this was a real, you know, a stem winder, the kind of thing that we have gotten in the past.
Oh, 100%. And that's one of the things that's so frustrating is that, you know, having been through this, you know, year after year, you know, one of the callers mentioned, you know, people having generators and that type of thing. I went out and bought, this is 7 years ago after a multi-day outage, went out and bought a small gas generator to be able to keep, you know, my refrigerator and freezer running, because food spoilage is a huge issue, and having to replace that is a real challenge. But a lot of people can't afford to do that, right? I also, you know, we do have a fireplace in our home. So I've been, you know, burning through, I think I went through a whole face cord of firewood in the last 4 days, you know, trying to keep my pipes from freezing and keep the home at a tolerable temperature. And, you know, those are all things that, you know, you're not going to get reimbursed from the utility company. And these are costs that they don't factor into. You know, they don't think about the stress it puts on people, the lack of sleep, the strain it takes to try and figure out how to do things you're not used to doing, like manually opening your garage door. And there's all these things, including the cost of gasoline for generators or, you know, firewood, whatever it is, extra food, that just doesn't get accounted for when they talk about their, you know, estimates for what things cost. Things like burying power lines. And I did just want to mention real quick, Stephen, that often comes up. It is more expensive to do transmission lines underground, but it can be done. And that is, I mean, a best practice going forward, certainly for new developments, you know, to the extent they can bury those lines, they should be done. There is some environmental disruption from doing that in terms of a retrofit. If you've got above ground lines, putting them below, but it's definitely something we should consider, because if we can't figure out how to keep these above ground transmission lines in operation and how to get them up and running again after an outage quickly, we have to look at alternatives. And one of those would be, yes, you know, burying those power lines is a good way to go forward.
Yeah. Yeah. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Bernadette in Old Redford. Bernadette, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stephen. Mm-hmm. Your guest mentioned something that I'm weighing, and that is whether or not I should invest in a generator. We don't have these power outages frequently, but when we do have them, I got to dump a freezer full of meat.
Mm-hmm.
So is it worth the investment that can be several thousand dollars to keep my refrigerator, freezer, as well as my iPhone powered?
Right, your iPhone, of course. Bernadette, I appreciate the call. Nick, is this something that we should be, even as a matter of public policy, considering, you know, subsidies for or the encouragement of people being able to, I guess, live for a time off the grid because the grid itself is not as reliable as it should be?
I mean, I'm all about, you know, planning and, you know, being self-sufficient. But, you know, for a lot of people, it just isn't.
It's even expensive.
Even to spend $300 or $400 on a small gasoline generator where you could perhaps keep your freezer running, you know, maybe run a few lights and things, charge your phone. I mean, that's helpful, but, you know, you typically can't run a furnace off of that. You know, you'd have to have an electrician come and specially wire things. And that's, you know, again, several hundred dollars to do that. For a whole house, those standby generators, which some of my neighbors have, and believe me, I'm very jealous of them at the moment. You know, they've invested, you know, probably $10,000 in some cases for the whole house natural gas generator that kicks on as soon as you lose power. Again, that is not even in the cards for most people. And so I don't think we should be putting this on individuals to have to, you know, dip into their pockets to, you know, make sure that you have power restored after. Again, these things happen. We understand that there will be outages that do occur, but they need to get back, you know, within a day. You know, to have this length of time is really just catastrophic for so many people. And so that's where, again, I think we can't put it back on individuals in this case. It has to be the responsibility of the utility company. And again, there are many other utility companies out there that do this better. So, you know, whether it's looking at, and I want to say real quick before I forget, you know, DTE and consumers, they're very effective at spreading their money around. They donate to almost all, you know, candidates for office and most of our elected officials, you know, including people that are coming out and saying positive things about the Public Service Commission and how they can have a better role, like Governor Whitmer, right? I mean, they've taken campaign donations from Detroit Edison, from DTE. And so that's something that I talk to candidates for office about. You know, are you taking money from them? And if so, is that going to influence your decision when it comes to things like legislation requiring that they either get people's power back on a reasonable schedule or they give us a significant rebate? As Congresswoman Tlaib said, you know, $25 or whatever it is after, you know, 120 hours without power, that's an insult. That is just an insult to your ratepayers, to your customer base. And it holds us back as a region. So I know we don't have time to get into it, Stephen, but I mean, this is an economic problem. There's, you know, grocery stores, gas stations that have been out of power. They're not making money. They're having food spoilage on a massive scale there as well. All that stuff adds up, and it's because of the unreliability of this grid, which again can be fixed. We see it done in other states. We've got a problem here with our utility companies, and they need to do better.
So we're running out of time, of course, but quickly talk about what would we have to do if we wanted to move to publicly owned utilities here in Michigan? How could we as citizens make that happen?
That would be, you know, a state legislative change. We have state law that gives authority for how our utilities currently operate. You know, there's some good reasons to have a grid that we all pay into and that we all share. You know, there's good reasons to have that, spreading those costs around a customer base. You know, we don't want to get to a place where, you know, I can afford power and Stephen, you can afford power, but the person across the street can't, right? Like, we want to make this something that is affordable and accessible because it's necessary for us to live. It really is. And so it does make sense to have utility companies that service a large area of people and a large number of customers. If we were to shift to a public utility model, that would necessitate a change at the state level, to have, you know, state laws to change the current regulation of Detroit Edison and consumers are publicly regulated utilities.
And you think that this would be different? We would have fewer outages and people would be reconnected faster if it were publicly owned.
Well, the advantage there would be accountability. You know, as Congresswoman Tlaib mentioned, also Congresswoman Slotkin mentioned earlier, you know, with the current structure, there's a lack of accountability, a lack of information. They only have to disclose so much at shareholder meetings. They only have to disclose so much at the Public Service Commission. And the final thing I will say is there's a lot of litigation over these rates. Mm-hmm. We talked about how, you know, when DTE asked for a rate increase, it doesn't just happen. There are rate cases that are processed through the Public Service Commission where environmental groups and others intervene to try and say, look, you know, you can't keep raising rates and providing substandard service. We've got to come up with a better way. So I did want to say that there are some current steps for accountability, but not nearly enough. So I think a public utility, that provides us more accountability, more options for the public to engage.
Okay. Nick Schreck, always great to have you here. Hope your power comes back soon and hope
before the next ice storm.
Yeah, right. The other 168,000 folks who are suffering as well, we hope that things work out soon for them as well. It's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to discuss the pros and cons of investing a lot of public money into the District Detroit to change that landscape and make it more attractive to more people. This is 101.9 WDET-FM. We'll talk again tomorrow.